Recorded live in Petone, New Zealand, this is the Cinematica Podcast, your weekly guide to what's on at the movies. You can find this and all of our other episodes at cinematica.co.nz. Welcome everybody to Season 3, Episode 7 of Cinematica. I'm Dan Slevin, and here with me in the Cinematica studio are...
Hello, it's Simon here.
I'm Kaylee.
And with us is a special guest reviewer live in the studio from the Sunday Star Times, Ms. Sarah Watt.
Hi there.
Hello.
Welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
Pleasure. And in today's episode, Kaylee and Simon finally get to spill the beans on Skyfall. I know that you are desperate to
unknow. Dan, I've...
You've moved on.
It's just, you had your chance last week. I was all up for it. Now I'm kind of like, oh.
Well, this is the nature of this business, isn't it? It's week in, week out, new stuff arriving. Well, we'll just see if you can dredge it from the recesses of your memory. We'll be talking about Skyfall a little bit later on. Compliance is a creepy horror film about social engineering. And we'll also be talking about the wacky and wonderful Beasts of the Southern Wild, which actually gets released into the wild on Thursday.
Yeah.
All right, but first, let's have a look at what's in the mailbag. Kaylee, you've been monitoring... She looks so surprised. Oh, yes, that's right. Tuesday. Recording on a Tuesday. We're not used to it, everybody.
No, everything's a bit surprising today. Yes. Let's see. Let's start with Mark, who pointed out that in last week's show, many people are going to be confused by Simon saying Frank Langella plays a cat thief rather than a cat burglar in Robot and Frank, which started off this great conversation about cats, and then basically... Internet cat picture contest between the two of us, which ate up most of my Thursday morning, which was wonderful. So thank you for that.
I think that's actually another free idea, Hollywood. A cartoon about a cat thief.
Yep.
Like a cat that actually is a thief.
Well, we were thinking it was a man.
Where do those socks go?
We were thinking it was like a guy who uses this robot to steal cats. And then I Googled robot that steals cats and Robot and Frank pictures came up.
There you go.
So someone else at Google's already made the connection for us, so...
Brilliant. Thanks, everybody.
What's going to happen this week?
What sort of faux pas?
What sort of... No, it's not a faux pas.
Isn't it?
It's playfulness. Just like a kitty cat. There
yes, true. Yeah. Miriam Ruth Ross, her two-word review of Skyfall is Bondiistic Scotland.
Oh, yeah. No, she would have loved the Scottish part of it, definitely.
Bondiistic?
Bondiistic.
I think that's what it is.
And can I just point out that she is actually a professional academic, and there she is making words up.
She's allowed. Yeah, that's right. How that's going to get in the dictionary, yeah.
Maybe it is, I don't know. Nick Ward on Twitter said, last night, your podcast kept me company while I drove from Auckland to Wellington. What's our favorite road movie? We have a question this week.
Oh, road movie. Yeah, well, isn't there... There's a poster for a great road movie up on the wall here.
Yes, we already spoke about.
Yeah, we mentioned that. Wild at Heart, David Lynch. Mine, does it count as a road movie? Paris, Texas. Is that a road movie? No, maybe not. Okay, but anyway, come up with your suggestions, everybody, for your favourite road movie.
We didn't get a chance to plan this one. I'm just going to go with True Romance, I think. Does that count?
Yeah,
it counts,
yeah.
Right? It's put two people in a car and they're like on the run from something. That's a road movie. I'll have that.
That's right.
I couldn't think of the last road movie I watched, so unfortunately I don't have an answer.
What about Planes, Trains and Automobiles?
That's a road movie. Definitely counts.
Yeah. Yeah.
And
right.
Totally legit answer.
Yeah, I don't know.
Well, come up with some suggestions, listeners, and maybe there's some opportunities to point us in the direction of some that we don't already know about. Certainly Kaylee, who's obviously completely lacking in the road movie department.
I don't know.
On the road?
I didn't see that.
Oh, okay.
It's not favourite.
Really. It's not a buddy film, is
no,
it?
No, I think really. I read your review of it, and I was like, yeah. Sarah says that, I'm not going.
Yeah.
I trust you.
That's nice, thank you.
Yeah.
All right. What have people been going to this weekend? Is Skyfall the number one film in the country?
I wish I could say I have like the damn it to announce this. Should have organized it. Okay, at number five, actually a bit surprising this week, Met Opera's Othello.
Oh,
very interesting.
At number five, yeah. Number four down from two is Argo. Sitting pretty at number three again this week is Untouchables. Down to two from one is Twilight, and in the number one position is our man, James Bond.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, straight in there.
Mm.
Yeah, it's certainly very busy at the screening that I went to on the weekend. Didn't get to see it twice, which is what my intention was, but
right.
time didn't allow. And now, of course, we're sort of moving on, but I definitely do want to see it again on the big screen.
Yeah, I've seen it twice, and it was just as pleasurable second time around.
All right, well,
it's really good.
We'll get into it right now.
007 reporting for duty.
Where the hell have you been?
Enjoying death.
I only have one question.
Why not stay dead? There's no shame in saying you've lost a step.
Targeting her. They wanted her to see it.
Welcome to the new MI6.
I'm your quartermaster.
You must be joking.
Also PPKS 9mm short. It's been coded to your palm print, so only you can fire it. Less of a random killing machine, more of a personal statement.
And in the personal statement department, Simon, you're our MI6 correspondent for today.
We've all seen it, though, haven't we?
We have.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. All right. Well, it's... When I saw it, it just reminded me so much of, going back to Casino Royale. I thought, you know, the what was it? Quantum of Solace was a bit of a disappointment. This one steps right up. It delivers on all the fronts that you'd expect from Casino Royale. And I wouldn't say it's better, but it's not far off it, as far as I was concerned. Mm. I really enjoyed it because it seemed to actually delve back into his past, but also have this great relationship with Judy Dench's character. And as the film progresses on, you know, that relationship sort of bubbles away, and it's quite sort of mother-son sort of banter that goes on, which I thought was really nice. And some of the references that they have to the previous films are really nicely put in without being over the top, and they work. And of course, the best baddie I've seen in a very, very long time. So I thought it would just tick all the boxes. It was an absolute roller coaster and delivered in many ways.
Right. I'll get my disappointment out of the way.
Yeah, go on.
My disappointment was that it left some questions still unanswered from Quantum of Solace and Casino Royale. Like Mr. White and the Quantum Organization.
Did he die?
No, he gets away. I even had to Wikipedia it to make sure that I remembered it
Jesper
accurately.
Jesper Christensen.
Yeah, and he gets away, and so as far as I'm concerned, there's unfinished business out there.
Well, maybe
the quantum.
Come back.
Well, that's what I'm hoping. I'm hoping that this is just an interlude.
I think it is. Yeah. I definitely think it is.
And you know what happened with Quantum? You maybe know this already. The whole deal with Quantum of Solace, because I was so down on that film as well until very recently, and then I read an interview where Daniel Craig explained that because of the writers' strike going on at the same time, the film was sort of half being finished as it was filming, and that's why it was just so shoddy.
It's not the only film that suffered from that. It would be really interesting to look at whether that year, 2010 sort of roughly, the films that were released in that year, how many of them suffered. I remember reading an interview with the guys, Kersey and Orsman and Kersey, the guys who wrote Star Trek, who said that basically they typed the last full stop on the script of Star Trek on the day before the strike was due to start, and they weren't allowed to do any rewrites on the set. That was just what was going to get shot, and I'm sure that happened on a lot of films, and Quantum of Solace was one that really did suffer as a result. Mm. So I'm hoping that we get and also there's been a big delay as well, isn't there, because there's problems with the studio and MGM being sold and going bankrupt and what have you. So there's been quite a long gap between these, and I suspect that everybody, particularly after the amount of money this film's making, they'll be wanting to get right back in the saddle.
But it's always 2 or 3 years. It's never less than that, because I remember Casino Royale came out in 2006, and I saw it came out on my birthday, 2006, and so that even was, you know, a good 3 or 4 years.
Well, I just think they should pull their finger out, frankly. Mm. You know, the public have spoken.
Hey, I'm quite happy to wait 3 years if that's what they deliver.
Well, that's exactly right. I think, to be fair, I think, Dan, if they speed it up, there's a danger that they're going to start churning them out, and we can't afford to let that happen.
I've heard the odd criticism that it's a bit wordy in places, that it sort of does kind of, you know, take a little bit of time to get going. But I thoroughly enjoyed all that. I loved it. I thought it wasn't too wordy at all.
Well, I thought it was just, for long periods of time, it was just like a proper film.
Yeah.
You know, with actors and drama
saying
and stuff.
Saying meaningful things.
Yeah. You know, relationships and subtext and character.
Can I touch on something you said, Simon, about the origin story? It's very clear that in this one, well, it seems very clear, and I don't know how conscious it was on Sam Mendes' part and the people who wrote it, but clearly they are taking heed of the superhero movies and the origin stories, and that's why this one, to me, certainly seemed very Dark Knight. Not just because of the sort of the darkness, but I mean, sorry, it's the first time, isn't it, that we actually do get to find out a little bit more about where Bond came
yeah.
from.
Yeah, there were hints in Casino Royale, I think, and it adds some more layers to all of that. And one of the interesting things from my point of view is that turns out Bond isn't even English.
Why? Where's he? I missed that. Oh, Scottish. Yeah. Okay, right.
His parents. Because you get to see the gravestone, and his mother is French, which just another interesting little wrinkle in the character.
Kind of makes sense, really. I think.
Your turn.
Yeah.
Anything we've
you.
Missed?
I enjoyed it because it felt less blokey than the other ones. You know, it's like because it had that relationship and that dialogue, it was just. It was a film for everyone, and I enjoyed it. And Ben Whishaw, I just can't get enough of this guy.
Yeah.
Like, seriously, he's like my new movie crush. I just, like, I'm drooling now just thinking of him and his, like, beautiful, beautiful hair. So it was, like, really distracting for me.
Yeah.
But
he uses egg yolk.
Yeah, probably. But Javier Bardem was just incredible, and he's just one of those actors who
Stunning.
Could play an amazing, amazing bad guy or, like, can totally rip your heart out.
He's not on the screen enough, is he?
No.
Yeah.
I want to say he's underrated, but I mean, he gets the roles.
Yeah. I think he is appreciated. I think they pitched him just right in the Bond film. I think, to be fair, if he'd been on screen anymore and if he had just turned it up a little notch further, because he was so camp, right?
Mm. Yeah.
He was so over the top and so grotesque and yet so enticing. I think somehow they managed it just right. Whereas if he'd gone a little bit farther, then it could have just got a bit...
Yeah, I think any other director may have pushed it a bit too far, but of course Sam Mendes is quite an accomplished director himself. Mm.
So. Exactly, and a director whose reputation is based on drama rather than action. And it is always interesting, this is twice in a row now that they've called for a director for the Bond films whose background isn't in action movies. Mark Forster directed Quantum of Solace, and he made The Kite Runner and films like that.
Mm. And Monster's Ball.
And Monster's Ball,
and
exactly.
Poor him getting Quantum of Solace.
I feel
for him, because that's a blemish. Sorry to go on, but that's a blemish.
It is. I watched Quantum of Solace again the weekend before Skyfall, just to sort of catch up on the Quantum story, thinking I might need to be up to date on it.
And little did you know.
Very disappointed. But it's not that bad, actually, Quantum of Solace. And the action stuff. Here's what I think they worked out, is that if they get the right stunties and the right second unit people and the right, you know, there's the machine of Bond that will make sure that the big action stuff will work. It's where you need a really good director is to make sure the stuff that threads all that stuff together works, so that you do care about the characters and you are invested in what's going on for them. But I figure that they worked out that, you know, Bond itself, you know, there's a machine there that will make the big opening sequence in this one. I watched it and went, hold on, haven't we just seen people run around those very roofs?
Yes, and we did in Taken 2.
Yeah,
yes.
And it was also where there was a big shootout.
Such an undeserved pipping at the post, right? So mean.
And it was also, there was a big shootout in the International. Is that the International or the Internationalist? Which one was the Clive Owen? Yeah, that was also on that very same rooftop. So for a moment there, I thought, oh, really? That's not like Bond to go somewhere where we've already been. And then it just, boom, it takes off, doesn't it? And it never really lets up after that.
Yeah, yeah. But for me, it was kind of interesting. It was also about the two main characters, I guess, having, you know, their history dredged up and played out in front of them and paying a price for their history, you know, what they've done, their actions in the past. And
consequences.
Consequences. And then introducing those new characters who will have those similar demons, I think.
Yeah. And something else that I think is also brought in from superhero mythology is a hero and a villain that could have easily been the same person if things had turned out differently. You get the impression that from the background, Javier Bardem's character's background, that, you know, either of them could have turned into hero or villain depending
That's
on
right.
The circumstance, and I think that, you know, the flip side of the same character, very interesting. I'm very, very keen to go a second time.
I came out of it the first time thinking, well, that was 2.5 hours, it was good, but I don't need to see it again. And then overnight it percolated in my brain, and the next morning I liked the film more, and I did think, I really want to see it again. So I thought that was quite... I haven't yet done that.
It's growing on you.
Yeah, it is. It is by the second. So,
I'm happy to see it again. I'm quite happy to go to it. But is there more... It's the same team, isn't it, for the next... Is it? They've signed on... Craig signed on for another two or three.
Oh, Daniel Craig has, but Sam Mendes isn't.
Hasn't he? Is he not in the mix?
I don't think that's a big factor.
I just think
that they always need a little bit of reinvention, don't they? And I think bringing a new... I get the feeling that the Eon Productions, the Broccoli, Barbara Broccoli and what have you, that's the thread that will continue sort of keeping things together. And Craig, I would say by now, has a very strong opinion about what he'll... allow the character, the directions that he'll allow the character to go. So maybe a fresh set of eyes from a directing point of view might not be a bad idea, you know, just to keep it fresh. I remember when they announced that Quantum of Solace was going to be directed by Mark Forster, I was thinking, but Martin Campbell, surely mm-hmm. you'd want to go back to the A-team who produced Casino Royale, but it didn't, you know, that wasn't really the problem with that film. It wasn't the direction.
I think it's important they give it to a new director each time.
Yeah, I don't know.
Because it's not a trilogy.
I love to maintain that thread, and I just think that, you know, they've really got something special there, and they could lose it so easily.
But in 2 or 3 years, there'll be, I don't mean a new up-and-coming person, it still needs to be someone with a bit of pedigree, but there will be somebody. We could maybe do a whole kind of, who could it be? Who should it be? Yep, who would we cast
as?
It's
funny, I've just been listening to, this shows you what I do with my spare time, I've just been listening to interviews with Christopher Nolan from back in when he made Memento and Batman Begins, and he talks a lot in those interviews about Bond as being an inspiration. So, you know, I sometimes wonder whether a Nolan, what would have happened with a Nolan Bond?
Do you know, I don't think they'll go down that road.
Not to somebody as established.
They wouldn't go down anyone who's touched Batman or Bourne, I don't think. Because those franchises those franchises are already seeping into Bond anyway, and vice versa, aren't they? Bourne's become more like Bond and da 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 da. But I think unfortunately for Nolan, he's missed that opportunity.
Exactly. All right, well, we've got 3 more years to let that percolate through, but before we leave the subject, we have to do a 2-word review.
Yes.
You, Kaylee.
It's okay.
My 2-word review for Skyfall.
Yeah, so we don't let you speak and then we force you.
Yes. My 2-word review for Skyfall is Gentleman Bond.
Oh, just classic Bond for me. It's brilliant.
Great stuff.
How does this work? It has to be something Bond?
No. Just any two
you
words.
You can dazzle us.
Feel free to
you make up new words too. Yeah, I don't mind.
Feel free to hyphenate.
Yeah.
We cheat all the time.
Yeah, I wish you'd warned me about this.
Yeah, and that's tough, isn't it?
Okay. I'll give you a little bit more time to think.
Yeah,
my 2-word review for Skyfall. Do we even mention the name? We just kept calling it Bond, didn't we? It's called Mr. Skyfall. My 2-word review for it is emotionally ballistic.
Whoa. Nice.
Okay.
And the ghosts have just opened the door to the studio.
I'm going to go with superlatively hyperbolic.
Oh.
Nice
work. Proper writer in the room.
That's
isn't
right.
That's what happens.
All right, time for some news, actually. We're going to go to a bit of news early. You ready for that, Kaylee?
Yeah, I am.
Brilliant.
The Oscar race is definitely underway with early screenings this week of Les Mis and Kathryn Bigelow's Zero Dark Thirty. Bigelow's follow-up to the Best Picture winner The Hurt Locker is plucked from the headline story of the hunt for and dispatching of Osama bin Laden, and Jessica Chastain is being tipped for the Best Actress nod. Have they gone back to... Is it Best Actress now, or is it Best Actor Female? What do they do?
It's Best Actress. I think for a while it was...
Were they PC for a bit?
Yeah.
They were PC for a bit.
Yeah, right. I can't remember how they said it.
Best actor female or best female performance.
Best female performance.
Or best actor in a female body or something. I don't know.
Yeah, that's right.
And of course, this year, depending on the way the votes, we may get 8, 9, or 10 Best Picture nominees as well, which just is
a drag.
Yeah, it makes for a long night, doesn't it?
Gosh. I was reading that the very first Academy Awards ceremony took 15 minutes. So, there we go. Maybe we should do a vintage one. According to a tweet from Russell Crowe, his Aussie compatriot Hugh Jackman is a front runner for the Best Actor nod for his portrayal of Jean Valjean in Les Mis.
It's been playing to... Well, I heard today that there was like... It played somewhere and there was like, you know, 10-minute standing ovation for
it. Yeah, I think the first screenings were of Les Mis were to the Screen Actors Guild in Hollywood. So, you know, a reasonably supportive crowd, I would have thought. But definitely the screenings of films like Lincoln and Life of Pi and Zero Dark Thirty has had massive positive response. And that was only a couple of nights ago, I think.
The thing for me with Les Mis is that there's such, you know, a history there. I mean, so many people have gone and seen the live shows and have got this romantic attachment to it, that if it doesn't you know, they've got a lot of nous, this crowd. They're really going to pick it over if it's not right. So they've really got to hit it out of the park, I reckon.
And my feeling about Les Mis as well is it's a sort of crowd like Glee, where if you're not into it, you wouldn't go. And if you were into it, you'd go. I mean, I got tingles down my spine watching the trailer.
Yeah, that's right.
So I'm clearly going, and I'm clearly going to love it, because they wouldn't have put that cast up there singing if it was going to be rubbish.
Yeah, and my I've said this to people on social media, and I think I might have said it here as well, that I
what
know
you mean in real life?
In real life. No, there is no such thing as real life. Yeah. I know that I'm going to love it. Absolutely. It's the film that I've been waiting for the longest, and all I can hope for really is that once I've seen it and enjoyed it, because I know I'll enjoy it, that I'll be able to get some perspective before I write a review. Mm. You know, otherwise, you know, I'll just have to come right out. It was like Puss in Boots last year. You know, as a cat person, what are you going to do? You know, it's like you can't fail, can it?
Oh dear,
it's a bit of a jump, isn't
it? Yes, it is.
I'm allowed.
Yeah,
I'm allowed.
Back to the news.
Yeah. Just carry on.
French journal Cahiers du Cinéma has named Holy Motors as its number one film of the year and its newly announced top 10 for 2012, also featuring our other films which are not going to get a cinema release in New Zealand, sadly, like Cosmopolis, Miguel Gomez's Taboo, and Hong Sang-soo's In Another Country.
And you're really pleased that I gave you all of those foreign names to pronounce?
Yeah, I skipped over the director's name of Holy Motors. I don't, it's like C-A-R-X. It's like how?
Oh, it's C-A-R-A-X. Carex. Carex, I think.
Correct? Actually, I bet you it's Carex.
Yeah, probably. Something Spanishy. So there you go. All right, and you found some news today.
I did, because this just was out of... This is a little bit TV, but there's some movie in there as well. There's this new religion that's even like slightly crazier than Scientology. And I'm going to talk about TV. I'm going to break the rules here. But this young star, the child, who's now an adult of 2.5 Men, has come out and like just totally admitted that 2.5 Men is absolute garbage, and he's on the show and he hates it and no one should watch it because it's filling your mind with filth. And he's a convert to this church called the Forerunner Chronicles, and it's this one guy with all these YouTube videos. And they've also made the movie about the Jay-Z Deception, which was a documentary on Jay-Z's connection to the Freemasons and his satanic plot behind his album The Blueprint 3. So this is just my like interesting find of the day of things that are online that kind of related for me to compliance, which we're going to review a little bit later.
Right.
Just like Americans out of control.
Speaks the Canadian. All right.
Going back a step on that Zero Dark 30, if you look at when that's down in New Zealand for the 31st of Jan.
Yeah.
So you look at that lineup.
That's the key slot, isn't it? 31st of Jan that's basically the Oscar contenders.
You have a
right
look
there
at January with Les Mis, The Master, Django Unchained, Anna Karenina, Lincoln, Silver Linings Playbook,
yeah.
And then Zero Dark 30.
Yeah. I know.
It's a huge ask. Big ask.
To get an audience, do you think?
I just think you're really putting a lot of titles up against each other that are all very, you know, very strong.
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, people, you know, they choose.
Do you remember when Do you remember when the Hurt Locker wasn't even going to get a release in New Zealand?
Mm.
You know that it wasn't until it actually got
nominated.
Oscar nomination that they scheduled it, and I don't even think it opened until afterwards.
It was timed perfectly for New Zealand though, because actually it had been around for quite a while overseas, you know, doing the circuit, and then actually it came along, you know, Oscar time, and it was actually, you know, perfect timing for the New Zealand market.
Yeah, except that it needed the gold naked bald guy to actually get a release in the first place. You know, it was like I can't think of who the distributor was at this moment in time, but it was one that we've already talked about a bit on this show.
But it did come out.
It
got the nudge. They were umming and ahhing, I must say. But yeah, you're right.
All right. Okay. Now we're going to go to the Louisiana Bayous.
The whole universe depends on everything fitting together just right. Have one piece bust, even the smallest piece, the entire universe we could bust.
This here is an aurochs, a fierce creature.
The star's coming!
Y'all better learn how to survive.
I'm your daddy. It's just my
our job to take care of you, okay?
Okay, so in the same way that I threw you a hospital pass with all of those foreign directors' names...
I'll say her name.
Yeah.
Are you going to ask?
Well, I was just going to say, Kaylee gets the opportunity to actually try and describe what Beasts of the Southern Wild is actually about.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to this.
Beasts of the Southern Wild is based in an imaginary place in Louisiana. It's kind of post-apocalyptic almost, like after it's current times, but it's like after the levees broke, they're kind of in, they're totally cut off from the rest of the world, and it's Hush Puppy. Sorry, I almost said Honey Boo Boo. Hush Puppy. I'm watching too much TLC. Hush Puppy and her father, they live kind of in these ramshackle places together. And there's this great storm coming, and they have to survive together. And, you know, she's grown up without a mother, and so she's searching for her mother and trying to kind of find her place in this world.
She's only about 6 years old, this kid, eh?
And just she was five when she auditioned.
Yeah.
And
wow.
Six when she played the role.
Staggering. Talent, really.
The name that I mentioned before, I thought you were going to say, Kaylee, pronounce that. But I think, because I haven't had to say it aloud, but I call it the Icelandic volcano of names. And facetiously or otherwise, I hope she's nominated for an Oscar, because I would love to hear them having to say, and I think I'm going to go with Kuvenzahn or Kuvenzahne Wallace. But I don't know how you say Q-U-V-E-N-Z-H-A-N-E. Is that right?
Mm-hmm.
It's probably Queen.
Oh, you know, it probably is. You're so right. You're so right. Your Siobhan's and your Neve's and everything else. Yeah,
it could be
so
Siobhan. There's a Z and an H.
Kavon. Well, there you are. I've overcomplicated it.
Yeah. So we've got this situation where they're trying to escape the storm, the flood. They choose not to be evacuated. The whole area gets flooded, and then they've got to sort of rebuild their lives. But meanwhile, the polar ice caps have melted, and these prehistoric pig creatures with tusks are stomping their way down
or
from the north.
Or are they?
Mm-hmm. Exactly. The Aurochs, they're a kind of mythical beast, and we don't know whether they're actually figments of someone's imagination or not. But the whole film is a kind of fantastical, dream-like scenario. No one will pretend that it's in any way a sort of realistic or kitchen sink sort of drama.
I was completely bowled over by this film. Okay, so I went to Cannes in May, and it was on there, and I went, I'm not seeing that. I looked at the poster. I didn't even see the trailer. I just looked at the poster. I went, mm-mm, it's not my kind of thing. It looks way too esoteric, too ethereal. So I didn't go. And then the young guy who made the film won Best Director at Cannes. And all I know is that a friend of mine there had said that he almost had to walk out of the screening because of the shaky cam, right? Mm-hmm. So I was like, this probably isn't all that. Then I didn't go see it in the opening of the film festival here. Same prejudices overruled me. And people went, it's so amazing. Oh my goodness, it's so beautiful. And I went, no. And then when I did actually have to see it, I thought it was amazing. I sat as far back up the cinema as I could because I was forewarned about the shaky cam.
I made the mistake of sitting in the front section of the embassy and it was overwhelming. So next time I see it, and this is another one that I want to see twice, actually. Definitely a big screen experience.
And definitely a far back at the big back of the big
indeed.
Screen experience. But beautiful.
Mm. Yeah, Simon.
Oh, yeah, look, I remember seeing it at festival, and I was wondering, though, if it wasn't more of a sort of political film, if it wasn't actually, instead of being this post-apocalyptic, I think it was actually referring to sort of the Bush years and the levee breaking, and there was a sort of political context to it. And the same with the beasts coming, you know, thawing out and coming down from the pole, from the ice caps, was that this was a sort of a statement about global warming and all of those sorts of things. I just wonder how, for me, you know, I think it was probably a much more political film than I took from it the first time I'd watch it. And I think to watch it again, you might, I'd like to think actually that it had more of a political statement, because I must say at the end of it all, I didn't feel like it actually pulled enough, you know, it didn't have enough punch to it, really, and maybe I missed a little bit, you know, I missed something to it, but it didn't
have emotional punch, or you didn't feel that you had
political
been
punch.
Yeah, it didn't
lectured,
really have a I didn't feel like it had a political sort of position, and I also found it just it felt to me like one of those films, maybe it's just me, but it was one of those films where unless you're kind of really in a circle about it, that there are things there that you just don't get. Mm-hmm. You know, there are things that just aren't quite there for everyone. So I it's very specialised in its nature, and it'll be interesting to see how this film works from a box office point of view,
yep,
post-festival, you know, and what the responses will be like.
I'm actually very surprised they gave it a general release, because yeah, I would
when
have
you
thought
think about, when you think about
audience,
the films that they're not...
Mm. Like Cosmopolis, I can't believe they're not just releasing a Cronenberg film because there's a built-in Cronenberg market, however small. Whereas this, which has no pedigree whatsoever, and I think you're right.
Apart from Khan, it does have. I mean, no pedigree from the people point of view, but in terms of the prizes that it's won with its Sundance.
Oh yes, but I mean, it's not like a director that's got a following, or indeed. Actors. They're all unknown actors.
Although it was the film that Barack Obama recommended to Oprah Winfrey.
To Oprah, yes.
When you think about, you know, he's a busy dude, right? And so presumably he doesn't get to watch as many films as we do. Mm. So this is, you know, that's a real, you know, interesting seal of approval.
I mean, it's fascinating just to see her in the role and to watch her performance. Mm. It's just purely worth it from that point of view, I reckon. But to me, it did feel a bit jumbled, particularly at the end when they sort of went off on...
Off to the oil rig.
Yeah. You know, for me, it lost its way a bit there.
I've become increasingly a big fan of films that don't go where you expect. And don't follow normal sort of common narrative structure and that boring old three-act thing that we see so much. And so The Tree of Life last year, Holy Motors, which was in the festival, and films like that where you have no choice but to be carried along by it because you can't predict where it's going to go, so you've got to pay attention. You know, there's so many films where you're ahead of them, and I like being taken on journeys, and films don't do that enough for me these days.
Apparently the guy who wrote this, who directed it as well and did the music, don't know if you noticed that, and the music was sensational, was the name Ben Zeitlin, right? So apparently he wrote this quite differently. I read that he only when he auditioned Queen, whatever we're going to be calling her from now on, Queen Wallace, that he suddenly realized he had this little gem, and he rewrote the script from what he called a strange comedy into being more of a melodrama in a way around her. So I wonder whether that also signifies that he didn't really have a clear-cut view of what his story was going to be, but he took the opportunities that were presented, which may account for why, Simon, you feel, it's kind of didn't really go,
It was almost a lost opportunity, I thought, to make a real statement.
Sure.
You know? But hey, you know, I think you can take a number of things out of this film. So, I mean,
And there's lots of layers. Like, there's lots and lots of built-in mythology in not only the names of the characters, but the boat that she goes to and these beasts and all these things that are happening. It's quite multi-layered. And it is... the thing I'm interested about is because it is based on...
It's a stage
one-act play.
And I'm like, how the... yeah.
What?
Yeah.
So... I want to see this juicy and delicious one-act play.
Mm. Well,
maybe it's off-Broadway.
We could persuade Bats to put it on or something like that. So let's go around the table and see if we can find two words to sum this sucker up.
No, I can't do it.
I can't do it?
That two words. It's too.
Simon's out.
I'm out.
Unexpectedly beguiling.
Yeah. Oh yeah, good work. Okay, I'll come up with my two. My two are all rock and roll.
Is rock and roll one word in this instance?
Yeah.
Okay. Hyphens like count.
You're the Fonz.
And my two-word review for Beasts of the Southern Wild is beastly fantasy.
There you go. Good work.
Terrific work. Okay, and a minor demerit for Simon on the other side of the table.
That's right. I can take it.
Minus one gold star.
All right. Things are going to get really tricky now.
This is Officer Daniels with the police department. I have a woman here saying one of your employees took money out of her purse. You have a young lady who works at the register, about 19 years old, blonde.
Becky, come with me.
I don't know what's going on here. I'm just trying to do my job.
Calm down for me, okay? We need to find the money, but I'll need your help till I can get down there. We really have two choices here.
He's saying he will have to take you to jail.
Or what we could do is have you strip search her right now.
I could strip search you here.
No.
Wow. Compliance is the name of this film, and this was a late entry to the film festival earlier on this year, and so I think a lot of people will have missed it because it wasn't in the main program, but it played at Sundance, caused quite a sensation at Sundance. I've seen it described as a horror film, even though it's, you know, based on a true story and it's set in a sort of recognizable Western reality, and there's no sort of fantasy about it, but it is just a psychological horror film, isn't it? Mm. To give you an idea about the what it's about, we've got a fast food restaurant in a small town in Ohio, and it's a busy Friday night is about to kick off, and the rather distracted manageress of the store gets a phone call from somebody who says that they have her regional manager on the other line, and there's been a complaint about one of the staff, and that he's a cop, and there's been some money stolen from a purse, and we need to interrogate one of the staff. So she just sort of does what she's told and gets the girl off the front counter and takes her into the back, and sort of at the prompting of this voice on the other end of the telephone interrogates her, and then it takes some very, very dark and twisted turns indeed. And you spend your entire time wanting to yell at these people, and so you say, like, grow up, pay attention, sort yourselves out. And it's only because at the beginning and at the end it insists on telling you that this is based on a true story. And I defy anybody not to go to Wikipedia after they've seen the film to actually look up the real stories, to just in order to prove that it did actually happen, and not just once but on lots of occasions.
Over 70 times. I wanted to see this in the film festival. I was really excited when it got announced, but I just couldn't get up the guts to go see it because the real stories are so horrific of what happened to these employees. And it just, I had to turn all the lights on in the house to watch this. Like, I don't, like, this was just so creepy. I knew it was going to be really, it's not gross in a, they make you see a lot of things. I mean, they're suggested, so it's done in that way, but it's just so disturbing. Because they, like the title, they just comply to what this person says on the phone.
I think it's a masterful piece of filmmaking, isn't it? Because there's so much that's suggested. You know, it's not explicit.
Well, you say that, and I'm glad you mentioned that, Dan. Can I just say, when you're playing the trailer just now, suddenly my heart starts beating a little faster, and I'm noticing that Kaylee and I are both shaking our head in that kind of parental this will not, because it all comes flooding back, right? Mm. Two things, though, Dan. You said you want to be yelling at the screen, come on, you people. Mm. To be perfectly honest with you, I think you're right in saying it was, I think, very, very well made, because I listened intently to all of the instructions the police officer gave, and I listened intently and watched the responses that we got from Sandra and Becky and whatnot, and it was entirely credible. And that's what's genius about it. I recounted it to a friend who kind of went, well, didn't they just know? And I went, no, think about this. Somebody rings and says they're a police officer, and it was an incremental, very, very cunningly contrived sort of situation.
Yeah, and also I was really interested in, because quite a lot of people are drawn into this little net. One of the young guys who also works in the fast food restaurant is asked to sort of to help out and sort of guard this potential sort of miscreant, and he just says no, there's right. Something wrong about this. Mm. But not to the extent that he's going to actually call the authorities or dob anybody in, because, you know, authority is a really key factor in this whole thing, you know, particularly when you're talking about young kids. It's their only job, and it's a small town, and no one really wants to rock the boat. All of the employees are really worried that they're going to get into trouble because somebody left the freezer door open the night before, right? So no one's really interested in rocking the boat. And it's just this fascinating psychological tensions going on between all the people at the various different levels, some of whom have genuine authority, and some, this guy on the phone who has none whatsoever.
Yeah. But Sandra, right? And I don't want to say too much, obviously, but how cunning that the things that he says to Sandra sound kind of reasonable. Thanks
yeah, Sandra's
for helping
the manageress,
me out, Sandra.
Yeah? Yeah.
Thanks for helping me out. You're being really great. Oh, she says, thank you. But then when he gets the phone passed to the other person, whoever it is, then he tells them something different, but they assume that Sandra's good with this, and it's so cleverly, horrifically done.
And it's that also that power of suggestion and wanting. I don't know. It's like he'd make this when he first called, made this general suggestion of like, oh, there's a blonde employee, and she's like, oh yeah, Becky's like, yeah, Rebecca.
Yeah, that's right. It.
And she just, it's that giving, she was giving him all the answers he needed to convince her that he was in the right, and it's just like, oh,
yes.
Oh, I have goosebumps. It's gross.
A couple of other things I want to mention about this film. One is the structure and the editing, and between each scene, the going out to the front of house of the restaurant and just seeing the normal
people
happily
eating their fries and their chickwich sandwiches
and the normality of it all. But
out the back,
it's just nuts.
Torture is happening.
Exactly, and also I want a big shout out to for the score. Actually, which I thought was just brilliant. I'm just going to look up the name of the woman who wrote the music. Just give me a sec. Somebody say something while I'm looking this up.
Well, I would like to say... No, Simon, you go.
No, you then go. It's fine.
Well, I would like to say that watching it, because I had to, because it's my job, I really wanted to get to the end. I wanted to see what happened. I would gladly have switched it off at some stage if there'd been a power cut or something. Oh, well, okay, that's the way it has to be. Because it does get, as you said, Kaylee, it gets not in stomach kind of horrible. But I have to say, it turns a corner at about the three-quarter mark, and that's when I suddenly... Well, not that suddenly, to be fair, but that's when I went, okay, I feel as though this film has suddenly slipped into exploitation of the original person's story, i.e. the original American person and people to whom this happened and whose lives have been ruined by it, and to some extent the actress, actually. And I know that Dreamer Walker is complicit in the filmmaking and all that, but there it got to me a little bit gratuitous. And I know that the director, Craig Zobel, I think, I know he strived to be objective, and it wasn't supposed to be kind of titillating and all that, but I think we in the room know what I'm talking about, where all of a sudden it's like, really? That's where the justification thing switched for me, where I went, oh, I'm not so sure that I would have necessarily gone along with that, cop or no cop. And I also thought that there was something distasteful in actually putting that in the film, because suddenly it didn't seem to serve a purpose to me anymore.
Yeah. That scene for me, I was glad they shot it the way they did.
Yes.
But there are things that happened to these actual people, and I was waiting for those things to happen, which were much more horrific. Oh. And I was like, ugh.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, so there's worse.
It's worse. Yeah. In real life, it's worse. And so in many ways, they tiptoed around what was actually presentable.
And they still left me feeling horrible for days.
Because, just left with, oh, my God, that people are horrible. Compliance. Now, this is a very limited release in just a few select cinemas.
Only three across the country.
Exactly. So this is one that you, I was going to say, you're going to have to seek out. I can't imagine anybody actually wanting to seek it out, because it is such a challenging watch.
People have walked out in the Auckland cinema.
But it is an extraordinary piece of filmmaking, and I will just tell you the name of the the score was written by Heather McIntosh. I loved the score, and I thought that it was fantastic. And Craig Zobel is a name to watch, because I suspect there's going to be some very, very interesting things coming out of him.
So you got your two words for this
one? Yeah, two words. Who wants to start?
You see, you're all exhausted now after describing that.
I find this film really...
Yeah, crappy creepy.
My two words are skin crawler. I didn't think it was a crappy film. I thought
Sorry, that was cheap.
It's one of those things. It's like this story is so easily already a film. Like these stories are so horrific already. It was so easy to make into a film. I mean, and yes, it's good that it's made. It's kind of this little piece of pop culture history. But skin crawler. Just,
all right. Sarah, what have you got?
I can only come up with gut-wrenchingly something.
Well, you could just leave it at gut-wrenching and take the hyphen out, and then you've got two.
Something.
Hey, what?
I like gut-wrenchingly something.
Gut-wrenchingly unfathomable.
Wow.
Actually.
You're good at this.
Yeah,
you bet.
I know.
Like, this is great.
With no preparation. Well
yeah,
done.
That's right. Well done.
All right. And that, ladies and gentlemen, is our show
what
for this
Simon's
week.
What about Simon's
words?
No,
Simon hasn't
seen
didn't
it. See it.
Oh, that's
I'm,
why you
I'm
didn't
just,
say anything.
I'm
I thought you were just
interested.
Too horrified.
Yeah, no, I was just like
it's gonna be
absorbing it all.
I think you having children of your own, it'll be a very difficult film to watch.
Yeah, you will never, ever let them work
you
in a fast
really
food restaurant.
You sold it to me, I must say.
Yeah. Sorry. Sorry about that. Yeah.
Yeah, it's a tricky one because you want to respect its craft and you want to acknowledge that it's a serious film made seriously
and made very well.
Yeah, yes. Made very well, but it's a hard one.
Also, I've just discovered as I scroll down, Craig Zobel was one of the founders of Homestar Runner, so he has done some very funny like internet good stuff. He comes from a good place.
All right, so. That is our show for this week. Next week, the Rolling Stones get a movie biography of their own, Crossfire Hurricane, and we'll also be interviewing the CEO of 3D movie technology company Real D about the future of the movie-going experience. And Miriam Ross from Victoria University is going to help me do that interview. We're talking to him tomorrow.
Yeah, it'd be interesting because, you know, when Real D were first there a few years ago, they were really the only sort of 3D choice, you know, when Avatar sort of came out. There weren't too many options, whereas now there are so many. It's a much more competitive market.
It's going to be one of the questions for him is how competitive. Apparently, Real D have been major consultants on the 48 frames technology as well, which is why this guy is here in Wellington this week for the Hobbit premiere. And so we'll be interested to know where he sees the future of that going and you know, what else can you do to sort of juice up the movie-going experience. Talking of Hobbit premieres, Sarah, why are you here in Wellington this week?
Well, Dan, I just thought it's going to be sunny in Wellington and nothing beats Wellington on a sunny day.
It's just our podcast. She's come down for our podcast.
That's true. I did. Yeah. And then when I was here, I went, why is that golem coming out of the airport?
You thought,
me?
Why are they having a parade for me?
That's right.
That's right.
So I thought...
I saw this red carpet.
It would be rude not to turn up. So I'm here to see the preview of the Hobbit film.
Right. And so, ladies and gentlemen, we're recording on a Tuesday night, which is... we're recording a little bit earlier because of the big parade in Wellington, which we're all going to go to. Some of us are going to get to see the film. Some of us aren't.
It's okay. Dan and I'll just take the free wine.
But Sarah, you're getting to see the film tonight.
I am.
Be genuinely the first first people who haven't actually made the film to see it tonight.
Well, I think so. I think so. Although
they only finished
Prince
it two
Charles,
days ago.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I heard that Prince Charles got to see it a couple of weeks ago, but maybe that was a joke.
Maybe just bits and pieces because my understanding is that they actually they signed off the last effects and sound mix two days
ago.
That
I heard too.
Yeah.
So, yes, we'll be the first lot to see it because tomorrow for the press conference and whatnot, we have to know what we're asking them about.
Right.
So,
very exciting.
It is exciting, isn't it?
It's huge
for the city. It's absolutely huge. The place
is buzzing.
It's huge
for New Zealand.
It is, isn't it? You're right.
Yeah.
Yeah, it is. It's enormous. Very exciting.
All right. If you've enjoyed this episode of the show, don't forget to click subscribe in iTunes, etc., 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 so you get the latest episode magically. Please leave us feedback at the iTunes store, ratings, reviews, etc. You know, we want more people to find out about the show and join the family. You can contact us and give us your two-word reviews and any other feedback about the show. And Kaylee is our monitor.
Yes, you can find us on Twitter at CinematicaCast, on our Facebook page at facebook.com/cinematicpodcast, and of course on our website at www.cinematica.co.nz.
All right, the show is a Guns of Steel production. The theme music was 6x6 by Earl Van Dyke, and you can buy that at the iTunes store. We're going to leave you with some more music. This is Once There Was a Hush Puppy from Beasts of the Southern Wild, which every time I've typed that, it comes out Beats of the Southern Wild, which would be a different film altogether. The music from this film was co-written by the director, the writer-director Ben Zeitlin, multi-talented, obviously. It's time to say goodbye to our special guest, Sarah Watt, also known as Honey Hoxley on Twitter. Thanks for coming.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, thank you.
All right, until next week, that's all from me.
And from me. And from Simon as well.
Oh, yes, and me. I was just reading. Yep. Just checking something out. Good news. Anyway, see you later, everyone.